out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 294. It's the Chaos Edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Don't really know how to label it anything else. Hopefully everybody out there is having a great weekend, a great season is upon us. So it's been kind of fun around here. We've had Tree Day, we've decorated the tree, the whole nine yards. So this has been a rather exciting weekend. We've had a lot of interesting little things happen around the house. We've been baking cookies. We got the Christmas tree. We got everything up and around. So it's a pretty good weekend. It's tiring though, I gotta tell you. It's also really cool since my little man's roughly like 2 1/4 at this point. He's really enjoying the holiday season a lot more than he has previously. So whatever season you happen to celebrate, whether it's you're going with a old school holiday of celebrating the solstice, which is in just a little over a week, or if you're celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever, it's an interesting time of the year. Families get together, conversations are started. So I've decided that I'd like this episode to be packed with conversation starters. I want you to know facts and sharing at the dinner table about all kinds of strange things, and you might wonder why I'm doing this, and it's basically because this episode is going to hold the keys to avoiding holiday pitfalls of religion, politics, items of a more carnal nature, anything that you can imagine which might start an argument, which is what the holidays sometimes descend into. But what we're packing this show with is strange, off-the-wall topics, which we hope will educate and inform you and might just bubble to the surface at some kind of holiday dinner. I don't know what kind of parties you people throw, so I'm just hoping that this is going to be a funny show. And it's the only thing I could really find to wrap around the entirety of this episode, so hopefully you're going to enjoy it. We have a ton of stuff to talk about today. On today's show, you're going to be hearing about any and all of the following topics: cookies, trees, holidays, lasers, pictures, ninja, Ted, fringe science, caffeine, horses, and apple pie. All in the same show, folks, believe it or not. there have been a couple different things that we've done at the Caffeination Podcast recently. We have, of course, upgraded to the latest and greatest version of WordPress. And just to give you the quick rundown, it is a paradigm shift in the way that you manage your website. So if you do operate a WordPress blog of some sort, I would highly suggest doing the upgrade. However, you need to follow the instructions to the letter. I've heard of three different people who've kind of messed up their site a little bit, so I just want to kind of pass that information along to you. If you don't operate a blog, it's not going to really affect you that much, but remember, turn all of your plugins off. Remember to follow all of the instructions to the letter. Delete all of the old files, not all of your stuff, just all the old administrative files. And when you upload everything, make sure all the permissions are correct, because if you don't do it right, and if you don't do it in the right order, it can mess things up something fierce, gotta tell you. So beyond that, it is a fantastic program. It's a fantastic way to operate a website. And this is the first episode that I'm doing entirely on it. I did post a couple posts on my other blog, The Traveler's Mug, but this is the first podcast I'm doing officially anyway. So hopefully that's going to work out correctly. Well, you'll know if it does. Which, by the way, if you are on the mailing list, I apologize for two mailings last time. It's mainly because I messed up, and instead of getting the show that everybody thought they were getting on Wednesday night, I didn't actually click and add the audio to the post, so there's just a great show up there with all the links and everything. You just had no reference to talk to them about, so I fixed it on Thursday morning, and thank you to everybody who let me know about the mess up. Sorry about that. Hopefully I won't forget to do that this time. The Caffeination Podcast, the show that you are currently listening to me babble through, is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and all of those shows are listed over at Tech Podcast. techpodcasts.com. A little fried, I don't even know. If you're looking for my show, the Caffeine Nation, the show that is fueled by my love of technology and caffeine, then you need to head on over to www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. Being the Caffeination Podcast, we thought it was a quite apropos URL. But we did, before we got into the meat and the potatoes of the show, did want to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. If you have to travel for business, I have great news. There's an easier and more affordable way to do so. GoToMeeting, the award-winning service that lets you hold meetings over the internet with people in multiple locations. Just log on to GoToMeeting.com and start meetings with a click. Instantly, everyone sees your computer desktop on their screen. It's like you're meeting in person, but without the expenses and without the time. You need to meet from your office, you can. You can do it from your home, your hotel room, anytime, anywhere. Plus, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, try it free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all the fun stuff that we are currently doing, like talk about all this crazy news that we got going for you here. I've already talked about the WordPress upgrade, such as it is. The other fun thing that we need to talk to you about, however, is the fact that we fixed commenting, hopefully, on the post. For a while there, we were getting so much spam comments, so many spam comments on the blog, and some of them were actually making it through all the software that we had in there, that we had to put a CAPTCHA on there, which is one of those irritating picture and word and letter and twisty things at the bottom of the posts there. So it was kind of hard to make out what it was. And for a while there, you know, a lot of people said, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you know, I'm fine doing it, and it's working." But I've had a couple people complain that it took them 3 or 4 tries to actually get through it. So we're trying it without the CAPTCHA again with the new upgrade. They upgraded all the spam detection stuff. So far, we've caught 3 things of spam so far, and any and all of the comments that should have gotten through have done so. So that's what we're trying to do for you here. And so if you need to comment, now it's a little bit easier. You can just click and go for it. So we don't require you to register or anything goofy like that. But if you would like to get the show notes, the shotes, as some of the other podcasts call them, I'm not going to shorten it that much. But if you'd like to get the show notes directly sent to your email, please feel free to send an email to caffeination@gmail.com. Just ask to be added to the mailing list if you would like to receive it that way. Or if you have any other comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you feel like sending my general direction, you can fire it off. Again, it's caffeination@gmail.com. All right, without further ado, we're going to head on into the TechCruft section here. We have a strange collection of stuff. There's just no way to beat around the bush here. The first thing that we're going to talk to you about is Everest. I'm not talking about a figurative Everest. I'm not talking about somebody's metaphorical Everest. I'm talking about the actual giant hunk of granite. Yes, we're talking about Mount Everest and the mortality rate of the climbers that are on it. Now, in the in this age of ever-increasing and ever-advancing technology, it allows people to do things that they have not previously been able to do, such as attempt to climb mountains that they really probably shouldn't. And there's a lot of people, when you really consider how many people actually attempt to get to the top of Everest, there's a pretty high rate of people who actually don't succeed, and don't succeed at an epic rate. That is, the people who fail to make the top fail to ever return from Everest. So there's been a lot of work done with it, and it's really kind of interesting for the stats junkies. And I'm not necessarily a full-fledged stats junkie, but I got to tell you, this is really wet my whistle for looking at things in a different and more analytical sense. Basically, a bunch of people have compiled stats from since 1920 to present day. Actually, since 1921 to 2006, 212 deaths occurred on Everest. And it's not from the things that you would think. It's not from diseases of climbers that reach high altitudes. It's not from avalanches or anything like that. It's actually, most of the deaths are actually people on the return who misjudge things or just don't manage to get on their way out, you know? So it's an interesting read, and I heartily suggest you head on over there. It's over at sciencedaily.com, but you can just follow the link through the venerable institution of the Caffeination homepage. But still, it's interesting to see some of the different things that they've picked out. Like, one of the more common things that a lot of people kind of pick up on is that they think that since the peak itself is so high, that there's going to be an increased mortality due to something called cerebral edema, which is basically bleeding in the brain. It's a very nasty condition that can occur if your blood is too thin. Basically, it goes through the walls of the veins and everything, and it's kind of nasty and all that other kinds of stuff. But they found there's a very low occurrence of it, I guess, because if you're going to attempt to climb Everest, you're not going to be a complete rookie at it. And your brain probably has has acclimated to the levels to a certain extent. But what they're saying, and what it basically seems to be the gist of most of the article, is that in the better technology has gotten, the more the mortality rate has risen. So it seems to be that people are kind of trusting technology necessarily when they really shouldn't. So just wanted to kind of pass it along because I thought it was kind of interesting, and it's just a great read about something that you don't usually think about. I mean, everybody considers Everest. You know, I personally don't have any desire to climb mountains, not necessarily because they're cold, because I actually kind of like the cold. It's just a lot of physical effort, and it's not that I'm opposed to doing it. I just would rather do something different. Alright, moving right along to something completely off the wall from that. I told you it's going to be a weird show. Over at Gizmodo, they have an interesting little gift idea for the ninja that you may or may not know. Probably if you know a ninja, you probably don't know they're a ninja unless they're a very bad ninja, in which case they're probably not going to be a ninja for very long. However, if you do know a ninja which isn't going to be a ninja for very long, then you could spend $20 and get them a blowgun and knife combo, because no good ninja would be without a collapsible blowgun and knife. They do, however, give you 3 darts with this. I'm looking at this, and this is just epically off. It doesn't look like a good design. It looks like a blowgun with a bayonet on it. Blowguns are designed to be small and stealthy, and I understand the need to, you know, to fold it back up, and hey, you know, you can, it just doesn't look like it is supposed to. If I'm going to think of a blowgun as being small and concealable, I'm going to think of a telescopic blowgun, you know, one that can fold down into like a 3-inch piece of metal or something like that. But what they seem to have done is attached it to a knife, and it doesn't even look like a ninja knife. I mean, if it's a ninja knife, it wouldn't be shiny. It would be, you know, a creature of the night in and of itself. It would have a blackened blade. And it also doesn't look very balanced, which is another hallmark of ninja technology. So it's a 3.5-inch knife, and I'm pretty sure ninjas use the metric system, so it's probably not a good weapon. But then again, ninja weapons are probably weapons that you don't hear about, so it's kind of interesting, so I thought we'd just pass it along. Alright, in case you have a secret lair that you would like to attempt to access, the caffeination lair is relatively open when you compare it to the rest of the house. Yeah, there's no actual door to descend into the basement because, you know, the cats are down here as well. But, it's fairly secure, I'd like to think, but I do not have a bust of William Shakespeare that where you tilt his head back to flip Batcave style little switch to enter into anything. However, if you too would like to get one, then you can get your very own bust of William Shakespeare and your very own little bat phone for $315. Does not come with the Batcave, which is something I would require for a large investment such as that. I'm pretty sure I could go to the dollar store, the 5 and 10, or some other inexpensive place, get a fake bust of William Shakespeare and put my own fake switch on there. And all you need is a saw to cut the head at a slight angle, and I'm pretty sure you could tilt it back with however you really felt like. But $315 for a little bit of kitsch like that is kind of a steep investment, so I don't really know if it's something I'm going to be spending any money on in this holiday season. And the next thing, however, is an interesting little gag gift that I'm that I would consider getting for somebody if I knew somebody who was a very cartoony type person. For only $30, you two can have your very own bomb tissue dispenser. Yes, there's a cartoon-style round bomb that says 100 tons on the front of it, and out the top is the fuse, which also happens to be a tissue, so you can blow your nose with the tissues that are coming out. For $30, it's a little bit overpriced, but it's right around the under $40 range for gifts where you could, if you knew somebody who was a cartoonist or something like that, this would be an incredibly awesome gift, so I just thought it was really fun. The only thing that I wonder is how sturdy is it? Because they don't tell you what it's actually made out of, so it could be rubber, which would actually be kind of fun. But I also wonder, you know, how sturdy is it? Is it going to roll off the desk or something like that? Because it's just kind of funny, but at the same point in time, not really sure how well it works. Next little thing up here is I'm going to save you some money. And how will I do that? They're selling M&Ms, and these are M&Ms that are holiday themed. So there's a red one and then the stereotypical female green one that you're supposed to hang on your Christmas tree as an ornament. The fun thing about them is that they are like motorized. They have glowing eyes that, and I'm pretty sure they sing and talk and do all that happy stuff. You can get them for $15 each or the set for $25. We have something that is almost exactly like this. The person who got it for us was spent $4 for last year's white elephant giveaway at our friend's potluck. I have it hanging on my tree right now. Let me tell you, it will scare children. It will scare cats. Just because they look like M&Ms doesn't make the freaky glowing eyes that move up and down as the thing talks any better. While I like M&Ms and I think the anthropomorphization of them, I'm probably mispronouncing that all over the place, but I think making them look as human as they do, I think they provide some interesting humor, but at the same point in time, the freakish moving eyes and everything are just, they're gonna scare people. So you could probably do something better with your $25 than buy that. However, the next little thing, I don't think you can necessarily buy this. This is more of a contraption that was put together, but it is impressive. Now, I know that we have some photographers who listen to the show, and now one of the most common issues that I personally have, and I've seen a lot of other people have, and they don't really necessarily take into account the background lighting for things, is so... Every once in a while, you'll go to take a picture of somebody, you know, prom or whatever else you might be setting up, and it's not like you're attending the prom. You might be going over there, and you're trying to take pictures of the people getting ready to head out, and they always seem to stand right in front of the sun. So when you try and take a picture, they have a lovely black silhouette. There's even some pictures from our honeymoon where it's, you know, we're posing in front of something and the sun has blotted out everything. There's no way to recover pictures like that. So enter into this a interesting rig that somebody has designed. This is a string of 12 500 or 580 XE type 2 strobes that they can go flash so brightly and so quickly to they can take a picture at 1/8,000th of a second exposure and it is totally lit. So you could basically take a picture with somebody with their face in front of the sun so it looks like a solar eclipse that would block out any kind of normal camera. With this, it will provide enough illumination to actually illuminate the foreground of your subject probably to within like the pores of the subject. If you have a good enough camera, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to see like, you know, muscle mass behind the pores, but it's kind of interesting, and I gotta tell you, I really like the ingenuity associated with this. They need to find a different way of packaging it, because it's somewhat bulky and probably only useful at relatively close range, I would say, but I gotta tell you, it's pretty impressive to see that. Alright, now another impressive thing that I just wanted to pass along is a look inside a designer's mind. Apparently there was a conference recently where three different designers actually gave talks. Unfortunately, there's no links to the talks. However, you can see some of the notes and read the person who attended its reviews on it. But one of the most interesting things that they actually put up there was a breakdown part by part of Pixar's WALL-E. The actual robot. Now, this is from the person who helped design the robot itself. So, Jay Schuster, who works at Pixar, actually presented sketches detailed part-by-part descriptions of how WALL-E was put together. And it's really kind of funny, because I'm pretty sure if there's a cartoonist out there, going back to cartoonists a lot today, but if there was a cartoonist out there and they were going to draw a robot, the funny thing, the difference between animators and artists is not that, you know, one is more creative than the other, but it's the fact that if somebody's going to draw a robot, usually they just draw the robot. However, with animators, some of them get so fine in the details that they actually design the thing itself so that if you wanted to, you could probably make it. Very few people who are animators and who are good animators will just create an outside shell of an object and be done with it. Most of them have, like, working pieces on the inside because there's a reason that it became the shape and the dimensions and everything that it is right now. And it always reminds me when I see people breaking down pieces of equipment and they're like, oh, you know, you can hide this in here, or you can, if you have to do this to make the outside look right. But the thing that it reminds me of is Renaissance painters. And I don't know why, other than the fact that I know that a lot of study of anatomy went into a lot of the Renaissance pieces, so that, you know, people's facial features, the structures, and the musculoskeletal system all started to show through in the art, and they became much more personalized and much more on point when compared to the previous art. So it, when you take a cartoon and you take what it is, it's a fantastic drawing. It might be a wonderful sketch of something that could be, but when you take it to the next level and you move on to animation, you really start to get into the Renaissance of art. And I really think that it's going to be an interesting film and an interesting piece to see going forward. Not necessarily just WALL-E, but anything beyond that. You're going to really start to see some crazy constructions in the next decade or so, just in film and media arts. And I wonder where else it's going to actually pull into. But working on a little bit of the fringe science on the next one, you know, taking that and moving it off kilter just a little bit. Not talking about the TV show, which is one of the only two TV shows that I currently watch. I watch Fringe and Lost and a bunch of cartoons. That's pretty much it. I'm not a big TV person in general. My wife likes TV a lot more than I do, so I have very limited exposure to pop culture like that. But I gotta tell you, Fringe is an unbelievable show, because some of the things that they talk about are really interesting, because they talk, like, obviously the namesake of the show is fringe science, and this is something that is classified as fringe science. They actually talked about it in the show a little bit. But scientists have now actually done this. They've extracted images directly from the brain. So if somebody is looking at something using the setup that these scientists work together to get, this is from Japan's ATR, Computational Neuroscience Laboratories. I always wondered, do people in laboratories actually go to the laboratory, or do they just go to the lavatory? But poor attempted humor. I apologize profusely. But the scientists in question here were able to have a subject read a passage, you know, read a series of block letters on the wall, and through the attachments to the brain, they can actually read the same, but only in black and white, images on a screen. So they show you here, it's funny that they're using a Mac in the picture, but I guess it's just much more design pleasing. But they say A is on the computer screen, B is the person's head, C is the computer, you know, mucking around with it, and then D is the image that appears on the screen. So they read the word neuron, and neuron appeared in basically thin air. It's really, really fun. This is going to be an interesting area, because some of the things that they were talking about, and I hadn't really even thought about it, but they're saying within the next 10 years they're going to be able to actually extract colored pictures from people's head. You're actually going to be able to have recognizable faces and things like that being pulled out of people's heads. So, in effect, real mind reading. So they're saying, what will this do to the fields of art and design? So no longer do you have to have the skill set in order to take your crazy realizations, your crazy visions, and force them through tools into something else. You'll just be able to think it, and it'll appear in front of you. That'll be unbelievable. So, but will that render an artist any differently than somebody who's not trained? You know, what about somebody who can't draw worth a lick, but they have fantastic things in their head? What are they going to be able to produce with this? That's going to be great to see. But the other things they were saying is, you know, you're not only that, but you're actually going to be able to do psychiatric disorders. You're going to be able to actually see what the people are hallucinating, which is an incredibly frightening field. And because people really have very visceral and very real reactions to the hallucinations that they have. These are like terrifying occurrences to them. Or some, it might be just like watching the movie A Beautiful Mind, where you're never really sure when you're looking at the picture who the person is seeing in front of them. Are they real or are they not? But you're going to be able to delve into what that means. But the technology isn't going to be limited to sight alone, which is going to be crazy to even think about. But you're actually going to be able to read feelings and complicated emotional states. I have no clue what the output on that would look like. I mean, is that just going to be a color map? Is that going to be a series of graphs? I mean, who knows how they're going to be able to represent feelings? But it's just crazy. And as we've been talking about the Renaissance here, which I probably should have titled this a Renaissance edition, because we were really going from front to back, left to right, all over this. But over at needcoffee.com, which is covers a different subject matter than I Need Coffee. INeedCoffee.com deals directly with the coffee, directly with the subject in question. NeedCoffee.com is completely off the reservation, just crazy stuff linked over there. However, they linked up to a TED Talk, one of the shortest I've ever seen. 1918 by a man by the name of Siegfried Waldeck. And he is a very accomplished over, I think he said, 11,000 different illustrations over the last 30 years for different newspapers and columns and everything else like that. He's a very accomplished artist. But what he did was he wanted to create a portrait of Leonardo da Vinci. And there's, I was unaware, but there's some discussion left or right on whether or not the stereotypical portrait of Leonardo da Vinci, the old man on the page, was in fact him. And you know, then they wanted to say, well, if this is the only self-portrait that is put out there, are there any other pictures that are there that might actually end up being self-portraits? So he broke it down over a different set of qualifications, and basically said, okay, fine, we're going to take all of his thousands of drawings, then we're going to limit it to just male portraits. Then you're going to just limit it to male portraits that are of a front or a three-quarter perspective, because you can't draw your own profile, so that would eliminate that. And then you're going to eliminate it down to only the detailed sketches, and he limited it down to like 14 or 15 or 30 or something like that. Then you're going to eliminate the people with obvious visual deformities or otherwise unpleasant looking, because apparently through, I was unaware of this, but through external data, they said Leonardo was a handsome man. So beyond that, they came down to three. One of them is a portrait of the musician, which is an early painting painted in 1485. The next one is the Vitruvian Man, the person with the four arms and four legs inscribed in a circle looking dead on. And then the third one is the supposed self-portrait done in 1513. Then he labels them out and says, okay, each one of these, are they in fact the same person? When you put them right next to each other, it's really scary. They do have very common features that run through all of them. They have the same wide forehead, they have the same bone structure, the same small structured chin. And if you watch this, this is only a 5-minute TED talk, and it's really a microphone drop at the end. I mean, like, if you've ever seen any one of the rap battles or comedy things or something like that, where the person drops the mic at the end for effect, in a sense ending all debate, he basically does this. I mean, this is under 5 minutes. He runs through his qualifications, he runs through Da Vinci's different sketches and everything else like that, through visual interpretation. He puts it up on the screen, labels them out, and says, okay, so we have the musician, we have the Vitruvian Man, then we have the supposed self-portrait. Each one of these painted in 1485, 1490, and 1513. If you ascribe them to the age at which Leonardo was during the period in which this happened, he would have been 33, 38, and 63. When you put the ages under those three pictures and put them in progression, they actually look like the same gentleman aging. There is one keystone to all of this. There is a sculpture that apparently Leonardo modeled for when he was 15. So if you take the profile or a three-quarter shot of the sculpture that he modeled for when he was 15 and you put it next to the other four, the same features exist across all of them, the same structure, and it just looks like a gradually aging person. It is really a revealing look at what Leonardo da Vinci, the master, actually looked like. So it's a fantastic little jaunt through that. So I just absolutely had to put that out there. It would be a very interesting 5 minutes if you chose to spend it watching that. All right, next up we have a Russian decides to trademark the emoticons in general. He has trademarked the quote and the parenthesis and a whole bunch of other different things. He says that he's... I'm not even going to honor this with a full-on review. Basically, it's a strange, obtuse claim that anything using characters to represent a face is a violation of his trademark. This is wrong. The first emoticon was done in 25 years ago by a person using the colon and the parentheses. It's not that nobody has trademarked it by... up until now. It's the people have tried, it's just always failed because there's prior art. It's in common usage. It's like trying to trademark a letter. So it's like, you know what? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to trademark the letter Y. because I have to. So I'm going to trademark the letter Y, and anybody who uses Y, I'm not going to sue individuals or anything like that. I'm only going to sue corporations because they're the ones with the money, and that's what I'd really want. So that's what the arguments against what he's doing are. I just put it up there because it's going to be you have to read it, and just your jaw hangs open. Seriously? He's trying this? I'm pretty sure he's going to have a patent on water next, and he's going to sue God for making, you know, the clouds rain and things like that. It's just crazy. All right, Time Wasters is an interesting little website where you can go over there. If you are on Twitter, you can put your username in there, and it tells you how long approximately you've been using Twitter. I've been using Twitter since probably about a month after their launch, so I have 8,000 tweets, which is a lot. And they're saying, well, if you average 30 seconds per tweet, which honestly is a very large estimate, because I know most people, if they're going to tweet something, it's a very short incident. You know, it's an instance medium. It's not supposed to be something that's extended. At the most, I've been trying to put forth a message that was a little bit longer, and I've had to edit it down. That might have taken 30 seconds. However, according to them, I've wasted 3.12 days using Twitter. So if you're going to rank me, at first when I ranked, I was number 91. And then as more people have put their username in there to measure it out, I'm now 629. When I refresh the page, let's see if I'm down further. Yeah, I'm now 644. So I'm slowly descending the ranks as more and more people are putting up there, but I thought it was interesting. It would be even more interesting if they remove all the bots and stuff. Like, they have Fox News up there. Fox News isn't a person tweeting. They're a service that's putting out constant updates, so I just thought it was funny. And then if you really have an up-and-coming tech, your own little wee tech, then you too can allow a baby to Twitter from the womb. I have not read through the article. It's just crazy. Basically, there's a contraption that you can put on the pregnant belly of a female, and obviously a female. I mean, men just aren't pregnant unless you're a seahorse, and you're probably not listening to the podcast at that point. I told you, I'm all off in today. But it's they can communicate via kicking and a whole bunch of other interesting little data. You know what? It's that's just too weird for words, so I'm not going to really go into that. I just put it up there because I thought it was funny. And then the last little thing that we have for you here in the TechCraft section before we head on into the caffeine and food section and head you out on your way is just a little link. It's called the Fail Blog. I know many people know this one already. I just want to kind of put it out there because I personally think it's funny. Some of the pictures up there are potentially not safe for work, just letting you know. But basically, it's a series of pictures of oxymorons almost. It's things which should not be. For instance, the current one that's up there right now is Black Friday official child drop-off site karaoke 8:30 Saturday. It's a beer and liquor lounging cafe, and with just the word fail. So it's they say babysitter fail, and you can vote on whether or not you think the things are good representations of complete inane things. Like, there's another one down there that says safety fail. It says fire department valve, and there's a door which is supposed to be open. It's probably the standing the fill pipe or the standing line or something like that, and somebody put a bar across it like a railing for a descending ramp or something like that, so it's in an inoperable window into the safety world. So it's an interesting little place to go and check out every once in a while. It's always good for a laugh, or if you're one of those people who forward images incessantly, you can go over there and get a fresh swatch of them if you so choose. Alright, that about wraps up the TechCraft section here at the Caffeination Podcast, diving on into the caffeine and food section here. But before we do that, just wanted to let you know, in case you are using this podcast in a manner unbefitting of a normal podcast, or if you are listening to it as streaming via a different service and you don't know where we are, this podcast is lovingly nestled all over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. Coincidentally, being this is the Caffeination Podcast, we figured it worked out. All right, moving right along into the caffeine and food section. Like we said, the review that I promised you for this weekend has been delayed because I forgot how much stuff we had to do this weekend, so I really didn't have time to type it out and have it all worked out. I have all the pictures and everything taken. I just have to actually get through the process of making sure it's pretty enough to put out there. So it is coming. All right, up next, little thing. I've been doing some baking today, and I actually recreated the Caffeination logo via cookie, so you can see that over there. I was going to put it up at the as a picture on the page, but I decided to just link over to the Flickr account because I thought it was fun, and I didn't have time to edit it out and crop it. It's not the best representation of the logo, but you get the idea. I might actually start doing cookie logos in general just because I think they're kind of fun. All right, and a fresh idea. I wonder if it'll ever catch on. And horrible play on words, but there's a... there's an interesting little story over at pictit.wordpress.com where basically there's a new design concept out there of a naturally degrading label. The label's pure white when it's printed, and as it gets closer to the expiration date for whatever you are labeling, in this case it's meat, the label slowly gradiates from the bottom to the top. I don't know how it does it, whether it's exposure to UV light or something like that, and I'm pretty sure there's ways to game this. And there's, of course, the date is actually on it, so you'd be able to you'd be able to look at it and check it and make sure it's all right. I like this idea in theory, but I'm going to tell you that this will never make the light of day in supermarkets, because supermarkets exist off of rotating stock. They take the stuff which is going to expire sooner and they bring it forward. It's called pulling the shelves. And then they put the stock that's going to expire later in the back, so that as the stuff that they're going to lose revenue on if it doesn't sell is pulled off in front, then the stuff that they've just got in is going to fall down to the back. So if you're looking for the really fresh bread, you'll reach into the back of the case. And that's also why if you go into the dairy section, you'll never see anybody loading from the front. 9 times out of 10 in a supermarket of any size, the back of the case opens up and that's where they load the new product from. I'm not going to say you're going to find the mystical jug of milk that's going to last for 6 weeks. However, if you do see a couple in the front, you know, reaching one or two rows back is probably not going to kill you. But with it definitely is true for bread, because you can tell just by looking at the bread and feeling it, you know, the stuff that's in the front is there because they want it to sell. So at one point in time, there was an article that I can't seem to find that talked about the effects of UV light on milk, saying that milk that was in the front, even if it was fresh, was more likely to go bad quicker because it was exposed to constant UV light from the fluorescence. If I could find that, I would pass it along. I just thought the label itself was interesting. You're just never going to see it. All right, next little story that we have up here is how to make an apple pie. Not just any apple pie, but make a Mac Mini version of an apple pie. And the funny thing is that it starts out relatively nice. Say, okay, you need a springform square pan. And they're like, okay, you use the top of the springform and you make a cutout to make the top of the Mac Mini. And then they get really kind of crazy, and this is from evilmadscientist.com, so you know it's a little off the reservation. But then they use a laser cutter to cut the pie crust. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't have a laser cutter laying around. If I did, I probably wouldn't be allowed to use it to cut pie crusts. But that all aside, I think it's an awesome use of a laser cutter. And then they show you that you build the standard definition little pie there, and you put just the Apple logo up at the top. So it's really, other than the fact that they're using a laser cutter and they put an Apple logo there, it's really nothing special and above and beyond. I just wanted to pass it along because, hey, they used a laser cutter to make a pie. All right, next we have a rundown of some of the strangest cups of coffee you will ever see. These are just regular coffee mugs and everything like that. But the first one's one of my absolute favorites, and I need to actually find this. It's called My Cuppa. Basically, it's Pantone color swatches that are around the inside of the actual mug, and they correspond to different levels of milk in whatever it's supposed to hold. So they have one for coffee and one for tea, assuming that most coffee when it is brewed is approximately the same color. Then they say, you know, using, you know, 1 spoon of milk or 2 spoons of milk or whatever it is, however they measure it on the actual cup, you can actually match it. And it's kind of fun because when you really think about it, you could pull this out at a holiday function or something like that and say, oh, so how do you like your coffee to look? They could tap the little swatch that you got going there, and if you really cared enough to do that kind of work, you could match it through the addition of creamer or milk. So it's kind of interesting in that. Next little thing they have up here is the Saski teacup set, which is a wooden set with a teacup which has kind of a little point on it. So without the actual wooden holder, the teacup is useless. Interesting, we've talked about the Dunk mug with the biscuit holder at the bottom. It's basically a little cubby hole at the bottom of your mug for cookies. I support this because I love cookies. And then there's a couple other different ones that are porcelain recreations of other kinds of cups. Like they have a porcelain or a ceramic recreation of a Starbucks style cup with a silicone lid. They also have a, everybody has the ubiquitous red cups, the plastic drinking cups. These are white because they're porcelain and they're crinkled so it looks like they're trash, but they're really not. My favorite one on this entire page, is the Alcatraz replica mug. It's actually a tin mug with USP Alcatraz written across the side. I did not see these when we went to Alcatraz. I would have bought one. There's a bunch of other ones over there. I just highly suggest you get a walk through, you know, take a little click through and see if you find any other fun ones you like. All right, up next they have a little article on whether or not caffeine is a performance enhancer, and they go through the length and the breadth of it, and they say why is it a performance enhancer given to athletes 30 minutes before. They're saying, well, they tend to metabolize glucose at a different rate, and they're going over this, and basically the goal of most drug testing programs is to produce as clear and as clean of a game as possible. Not that I'm against drug testing, but there is certainly a point where you're saying, okay, so does that mean that an athlete can't have a cup of coffee in the morning? Because most normal people would have a cup of coffee in the morning, even if somebody is going into a meeting. I know people who bring coffee into the meeting with them. I am one of them. Does that mean I'm using a performance enhancing supplement? How far are you going to take it? Because I'm pretty sure that food is a performance enhancing supplement, and they should probably ban it and see how long all the athletes last. And then the next little thing that they have up here, which I was just kind of stunned about, is some people are giving caffeine to horses. Now, this is a performance enhancing supplement. This is a use because horses don't, you know, Mr. Ed style, pull up in the morning to their local Starbucks and get a little, you know, a bale of hay and a cup of coffee. That just doesn't happen. Yes, while it does naturally occur in treats such as chocolate, not to the levels that it occurs in other things. I mean, chocolate has maybe 30 milligrams of caffeine for the entire bar, if I remember correctly. But it's incredibly low when you compare it to, like, coffee, which is, for an entire cup, it's, like, somewhere between 80 to 150 milligrams. So I just thought it was fun. Thought the two little articles there would round out the show for today. Like I said, it's a crazy collection of the different stuff that we've had for you here on today's show. Hopefully you enjoyed it. This has been the Caffeination Podcast. We are lovingly nestled with all of the other episodes and this one as well over at www.caffeination.com, that being the Caffeination Podcast. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, all listed over at techpodcasts.com. And last but most certainly not least, we are a Puzzle Piece production. So to find out more about what that means, head on over to Puzzle Piece Pro.com. I'd like to thank you so much for listening to us today. It's yet another extended edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. We've been getting some good feedback on them, so let us know what you think. Thank you so much for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.